Chapter 2. What is the relationship between play and learning? You might have heard a teacher say to a group of students, "We are here to learn, not play." Or perhaps more sympathetically, "Sorry, we don't have time to play now." For some, learning and playing seems unconnected. As you strive to bring more play and playfulness into your practice, you are likely to be asked, "Why should children play at school?" We have certainly been asked this question. Our answer, play supports learning. In this chapter, we take a step back from classrooms and schools and focus on this relationship, providing a three-part explanation of how play supports learning. In the first part of our explanation, we reference a drawing of a city we created to illustrate 5 central characteristics of play that support learning. The next part of our explanation provides a review of the literature on play and learning, exploring what the evidence says and what play researchers agree on regarding the relationship between play and learning. The third part of our explanation draws on the historical and anthropological record to illuminate how play can be a strategy for learning, particularly for adults seeking to answer big questions and solve complex problems. We conclude this chapter by proposing that understanding the connection between play and learning will be useful for your conversations with colleagues, administrators, families, and the broader community. 5 characteristics and a drawing of people playing and learning. What are the characteristics of play, and how do they support learning? We answer this question by turning to a framework created by leading practitioners, researchers, and policymakers from around the world. The group, convened by LEGO Foundation, reviewed the literature on learning, play, and neuroscience, and asked children their views on play and learning. While there is certainly more than one way to describe the characteristics of play, we use this framework because it articulates the link between play and learning and highlights the social and active nature of learning processes. The framework outlines these 5 characteristics of playful learning experiences: joyful, meaningful, actively engaging, iterative, socially interactive. We begin our examination of these 5 characteristics of playful experiences in a way we hope you will find playful. On the next few pages, we share a drawing of people engaged in playful activities. Though set in an imagined city, the drawing is based on real situations. The architecture is inspired by buildings from our 4 research sites: Denmark, South Africa, the U.S., and Colombia. The activities, too, are drawn from real situations: a group of friends playing Pokemon Go, the POP research team exploring materials in our office. In this city, citizens have the resources to play and value spending time playing. Their activities are inspired by play around the globe. The drawing depicts play among children, play between children and adults, play among adults, and play between people and other animals. People are playing in groups and alone. There are games with rules, pretend play, play in nature, play that involves computers, play with materials, and play with ideas. Although the drawing captures many types of play, of course not all forms of play are represented. For example, there is no rough and tumble play or extreme sports. The show notes advises you a way to go and find the drawing. In the drawing, you will first see a neighborhood and business district with apartments, offices, and street life. Here you will find families, friends, neighbors, and colleagues playing together. You will find the South African artist Esther Magahu painting on the side of a building, and the physicists Niels Bohr and Wolfgang Pauli discussing the spin of electrons. There is also a carnival parade led by Balmer Atelier, an inclusive art collective from northern Germany. On the double pages that follow, you will see school, field, and forest. You will find students and educators engaged in playful activities, many inspired by the book's pictures of practice. If you look closely, you will find that the drawing has some fanciful elements. You'll see a playful mascot in the attic of the school. And we have left a classroom empty so you can imagine your classroom as part of the school where playful learning is occurring. In the endnotes, we annotate the drawing, providing an explanation for each activity represented. We frame our discussion of the drawing around the characteristics of playful experiences: joyful, meaningful, actively engaging, iterative, and socially interactive. As you look over the drawing, we invite you to notice where people are having joyful experiences, are socially interactive, and are actively engaged. And then reflect on how these experiences may help them learn, develop skills, gain information, and think more critically, creatively, and collaboratively. We hope that you enjoy exploring the drawing. Joyful. The city in our drawing is a joyful one. We see dancers in front of apartment buildings, a student examining the globe in her classroom, and children playing in puddles in front of their school. We see adults and children laughing, smiling, and connecting. In some cases, joy comes from engaging in a task itself, like the artist who is painting the side of an apartment building. In others, joy is the result of sharing meaningful experiences with friends. In other instances, it comes from something surprising, as when the cat on the second floor apartment unexpectedly jumps to catch the yarn. Yet joy is more than feeling good. Sometimes the greatest joy comes from overcoming a challenge, which some educators call hard fun. How does the joy found in play support learning? You likely remember the excitement and the ease of learning about something you really enjoyed. Joyful experiences involve the heart and mind, emotions and cognition. Joy promotes motivation and interest, which furthers learning. Meaningful. The people in the illustration care about what they are doing. The activities are interesting and meaningful to them. The participants have chosen to take part, intrinsically motivated by the activities. This is the case for Bohr and Pauli, playing with tops in order to better understand the spin of electrons, a phenomenon they are passionate about understanding. How do meaningful activities support learning? When something is meaningful, people attend carefully. They relate their new experiences to what they know and make connections that allow for further and deeper learning. Based on what they know, they explore what is unknown. Actively engaging. Players often lose themselves in play. They enter what some describe a state of flow, total immersion in an activity. So it is not surprising that in our picture of play, people are active and engaged. From the climbers in the rock gym, to the children in the tree, to the girl participating in the online dance class at home, they are immersed in what they are doing. For some, the engagement is hands-on, such as the children playing hide-and-seek in their kitchen. For others, the engagement is more cerebral, such as the classroom conversations about policing. In all cases, there is full engagement in the activities. How are the qualities of active engaging connected to learning? Consider the difference between using signs, landmarks, and a map to walk your way through a new city versus following directions as directed by a GPS voice. If you follow the voice, you are relieved of the responsibility of making observations about or understanding where you are in relationship to city features or layout. Sure, you may pay attention at the start of the trip, but it is likely that your attention will fade. Someone else is telling you when to turn. If you are the navigator, you have to pay attention. You might find you get lost. That is part of the learning process. You will likely learn your way around the new city much faster. You will learn much more when your mind and body are actively engaged. They are inherently linked. Iterative. Many of the people in our city are iterating, trying something out, and, after considering how it went, trying again. In the Project Zero offices, a group of researchers is trying out an activity as they make another draft of a workshop to support teacher learning. The skateboarders have tried, experimented with, and practiced their moves countless times. The daughter-father cooking team has used this recipe before, but this time around, they are trying out a new secret ingredient and are excited to see how it goes. Children do not play because it is easy. They often play because it is hard, because of the challenge. The motivation to play supports children's tendencies to try and try again. If something is challenging, they will often continue to try until they get to a point that satisfies them. Iteration is fundamental to learning. As a child, how did you learn how to write your name, to ride a bike? As an educator, how did you learn to lead an engaging group conversation? You tried and tried and tried again. You iterated. Through iteration, people experiment, revise, explore different strategies, and discover their next question. They learn. socially interactive. Our playful city is a social city. In person and online, people are playing in pairs, trios, and larger groups. Even play that does not seem social has social aspects. Although she is working alone, the painter Esther Mugahu has the patterns of her Nabali ancestors in mind as she paints the wall. People like to play together. Social connections are part of the fun. Play provides meaningful ways to explore the world with others. Social connections promote learning. Indeed, the most powerful resource available to support learning is other human beings. When people interact, they often learn from and with another. They communicate and articulate ideas. They are apprenticed into ways of thinking. Similarly, in play, participants learn how to negotiate and take the perspectives of others. Even in competitive games, it is critical to be able to understand what your opponents are thinking, for example, in poker, deciding when someone is bluffing or not. The research on play and learning. Using the drawing of a city, we have just described how learning is supported by experiences that are playful, that are joyful, meaningful, actively engaging, iterative, and socially interactive. But educators aiming to bring more playful learning into their classrooms and schools are often asked, what is the evidence? What does the research say? To answer these questions, the second part of our explanation of how play supports learning shares a review of the research literature. To start, a word about what research evidence provides. Anthropologist and neuroscientist Andreas Restrup describes research as the process of mapping out parts of the world, which tells us what we can and cannot say about certain phenomena. Taken together, research from a variety of disciplines on play and learning has created a map that tells us that we can no longer say that play is frivolous and has no impact on learning. Rather, the map shows that play supports learning, as Junyi Chu and Lars Schultz explain. In all forms of modern psychology, perhaps few claims are so uncontroversial. Parents, educators, and researchers alike believe that play in early childhood supports learning. This does not mean everything is known about play and learning, or that there cannot be improvements in the methods used to create this map. What we offer here is an overview of what the current research says. Using English, Spanish, Chinese, and Arabic databases that catalog a range of disciplines, ethology, evolutionary biology, neuroscience, developmental psychology, and education, we have organized the research on play and how it supports learning into two broad categories, research on non-human animals and research on people. Research on animals. What do we know about the relationship between play and learning from research on animals? First, we know that a lot of animals play. Evolutionary biologists who study play have created a range of criteria for categorizing what animal behavior can be considered play. Using these criteria, they have identified a long list of species that play: cats, pigs, otters, Komodo dragons, octopuses, bears, horses, parrots, and more. Moreover, animals seem to want to play. Like human children who have been made to sit still and listen to their teacher for too long, when deprived of the opportunity to play, animals will then play more when given the chance. Which raises the question, why do animals play? When evolutionary biologists consider the why of any animal behavior or trait, they search for a link between the behavior or trait and the benefits it provides to the animal's survival, such as finding food, reproducing, or adapting to the environment. Polar bears have long white fur to help them survive the Arctic cold and provide camouflage as they hunt. Male long-tailed partridges have long, colorful tail feathers to attract mates. At first blush, play is a mystery. Why would an animal spend energy and even risk injury on a behavior with no direct benefits for survival? Over time, a widely embraced hypothesis has emerged. Animals play to train for the unexpected. In other words, they play to learn. The answer to how play helps animals learn depends on the animals. When the New Caledonian crow plays with sticks and twigs, it learns about their uses as building materials and tools. Young crows will pick up sticks, shake them, and toss them around. Adult crows will even throw twigs to their young to play with. When they grow up, These crows use twigs to build nests and dig insects out of deep cracks in trees. Other animals learn other skills in play. Lion cubs learn how to hunt, rabbits learn how to hide, and rats learn how to socialize. More on this below. Recently, researchers have begun to measure specific learning benefits animals gain through play. Rats, a relatively clever species whose brains bear similarities to humans, have been a popular subject of these laboratory experiments. Much of young rats' play involved play fighting. Juvenile rats, deprived of opportunities to play fight but not social interactions, fail to learn the social strategies needed to navigate life in rat colonies. Rats deprived of play in their early development show higher stress levels in new situations and lack strategies to reduce this stress. Play in rats also results in specific organizational changes in their brain, which suggests there is a physical component in how play impacts social learning and decision-making. It is no surprise that biologists have found that the more intelligent an animal is, and the more time it takes to mature into adulthood, the more it plays. Rats, a highly adaptive species, plays more than mice. While most birds do not play much, the New Caledonian crow, who are super smart by bird standards, play a lot. Primates, along with their mammalian cousins, dolphins and whales, all very clever, play more than most species. And human beings, who have come to dominate the earth despite not being the strongest or fastest animals, seem to play the most. Human research. There are similarities between the way people and certain animals play. Watching a pair of four-year-olds wrestle, it is hard not to think puppies. In play, people test, explore, and advance their physical abilities. They build social skills, and they learn to regulate their emotions. It is not surprising that depriving humans of play, like in rats, causes problems. Research in the U.S. found alarmingly high expulsion rates in preschools that limit play-related activities. Other investigations suggest a link between play deprivation and antisocial behavior. Human play differs from other animal play in that it includes a unique feature, pretense. As far as we know, among all the animals that play, humans are the only ones who pretend. By fostering the human capacity to imagine, play supports the development of a complex set of skills and mindsets young people need in order to take part in adult society. The developmental psychologist Alison Gopnik explains that, much like scientists in investigating the world, play is children's ways to test hypotheses about how the world works. Pretense is the basis of symbol systems, math, reading, and music. You need to use your imagination to understand that the symbol 5 stands for 5 objects, that the letter A stands for the sound A, and the note, quarter note, stands for a quarter beat. In play, children ask, what if? Experimenting and imagining, the essence of creativity. A review of data from hundreds of thousands of American children argues a decrease in children's ability to imagine and see things from different angles over the last 30 years might be related to fewer opportunities to play. Further evidence that play supports human learning is that children play when it challenges them and stop when it becomes easy. In other words, they play when they are learning, and they stop playing when the learning possibilities have ended. Laboratory studies also show that when children get to play with new objects, as opposed to being instructed on how to use the object, their explorations are longer and they make more discoveries. Studies from classrooms point to the learning benefits of play. In early childhood, when children play with blocks, their abilities to count, classify, and create patterns expand. Sociodramatic play builds vocabulary and the ability to tell stories, with important links to literacy. Playful lessons and experiences promote creativity and help children to understand abstract concepts, including environmental phenomena. Indeed, children who participate in play-oriented early childhood classrooms show long-term academic gains. Research in primary and middle school classrooms also demonstrate links between play and the acquisition of academic skills, deepening content knowledge in domains of mathematics, literacy, science, and computer technology. New research suggests another link between play and academic success. Enjoyment of school in the early years leads to academic achievement in high school. A study of 10,000 young people in the United Kingdom found that students who like school when they are young go on to perform better in academic tests in high school, regardless of ethnicity, social class, or gender. What determines whether young children enjoy school? Not surprisingly, interviews reveal that kindergartners' enjoyment of school is the result of getting to play, and activities related to play, making and creating, having choices, being with friends and teachers, and learning. Importantly, once children stop liking school, it is hard to get them to like it again. Neuroscience provides another contribution to the map of play and learning. While there is still much to learn about brain development and play before conclusive statements can be made, it appears that good things happen in the brain when people play. When a person has experiences that are joyful, meaningful, actively engaging, iterative, and socially interactive, in other words, playful, areas of the brain are activated, and chemicals are released that are related to focused attention, memory, and movement from effortful to automatic learning. Cognitive psychologist Mark Malavit Anderson has formulated a provocative hypothesis. Play is not just rewarding behavior in itself. The underlying goal in play is gaining new information about the world. Children experience play as enjoyable because it allows them to seek out or create ideal circumstances for information gain. It allows them to learn. There is no one study that proves play supports learning. However, research from fields as diverse as ethology, developmental psychology, education, and neuroscience have helped create a map. With this map, we can no longer say that play has no purpose. Play offers a motivating and efficient place to learn. Motivating because learning certain skills helps keep the play going, making it more interesting, and offers more opportunities to connect with friends. Efficient because in play, children learn in many different directions at once, gaining information, understanding disciplinary concepts, developing skills, thinking critically and creatively, and collaborating to build knowledge. Play is a good place to get some thinking done. Play as a strategy for learning. Recall an adult you know or know about who is particularly good at identifying and solving problems. The nature of these problems can vary: a dispute between neighbors, a stubbornly leaky sink, or how to explain a difficult concept. We have a hypothesis. The person you are thinking of, when faced with puzzles and problems, is predisposed to ask, "What if?" They imagine different and new possibilities. They test and try. They invent, often with others. They use play as a strategy for learning. The third part of our explanation about how play supports learning focuses on adults, highlighting play's role in the creativity of people who make a difference for their families, communities, and the wider world. The research on adult play confirms what you likely experience. Perhaps because of expectations about adulthood, adults play less than children. Still, adults play to enjoy themselves, make social connections, and learn about the world. For adults, play continues to support learning, specifically learning something new. The sciences provide abundant examples of play and playfulness supporting discovery, creativity, and learning. Returning to the physicist Niels Bohr, pictured in Our Playful City, in the 1920s through 40s, Bohr led a research center at the University of Copenhagen where he worked on one of the knottiest problems of 20th century science, the inner workings of the atom. The atmosphere of Bohr's lab has been described as playful intensity or intense playfulness. Bohr himself was famous for his curiosity and playfulness. On walks in the woods, on ski trips, and over glasses of wine, Bohr would ask, "What if we tried that? And what if the atom worked like this?" Along with members of his lab, he would, for example, get out tops and play with them in order to better understand the spin of electrons. The result of this playful learning were important contributions to the development of quantum theory, the theoretical foundations of smartphones, GPS, and MRIs. Bohr and his colleagues are far from unique. In his book Wonderland, How Play Made the Modern World, science and technology writer Stephen Johnson describes how, throughout history, adult play has led to groundbreaking innovations. From rubber, first created to make balls for play, now a critical component in a wide variety of products, to probability theory, invented to more successfully play games of chance, now used to design apps and predict weather, to computers, play has been critical for learning. Marie Curie, the two-time Nobel Prize-winning physicist and chemist, described the childlike and playful nature of her work. "I am among those who think that science has great beauty. A scientist in his laboratory is not only a technician, he is also a child placed before a natural phenomenon, which impress him like a fairy tale." Alexander Fleming, who discovered the life-saving properties of penicillin, called the playful nature of his work play with microbes. He explained how he used play as a strategy for learning. There are, of course, many rules in this play, and a certain amount of knowledge is required before you can fully enjoy the game. But when you have acquired the knowledge and experience, it is very pleasant to break the rules and to be able to find something that no one has thought of. The creative possibilities of play extend beyond science to politics, how groups of people, big and small, organize themselves, solve problems, set priorities, and distribute power and resources. An inspiring example of using play as a strategy for learning comes from an unexpected setting, the prison set up by the apartheid government of South Africa on Robben Island. Robben Island was designed to break freedom fighters' spirits. On arrival on the island, they were told, "You will die here." Yet Nelson Mandela, who had become the first president of a democratic South Africa, and his colleagues turned the island into what has become called the university. They asked themselves, "What have we taught our comrades who can't read literacy skills? What have we gave seminars on history and political theory during our short breaks in the limestone quarry?" Despite meager rations and isolation from their community, the prisoners on Robben Island led their own learning, found joy in being together. How else could they have persevered? And explored the unknown, creating something seemingly unimaginable, a training ground for the future leaders of their country. In their book, The Dawn of Everything, A New History of Humanity, David Graeber and David Wingrove describe how, throughout history, people have played with social structures, experimenting and iterating to find solutions that worked for their communities. They describe a large prehistoric settlement in present-day Ukraine that showed evidence of constant innovation, even playfulness, of social organizations. Despite the general uniformity of resources among households, excavations found differences in the physical layouts of the homes with a dazzling variety of artistic expressions. They share evidence from the Greek Isles suggesting the use of clay icons to envision and play out social structures. Synthesizing the archaeological and anthropological records from around the world, they note the particular value of festivals as a laboratory of social possibility, out of which were created new ways to organize society. They conclude that, time and again in human history, the zone of ritual play has acted as a site of social experimentation, even in some ways and as an encyclopedia of social possibilities. These possibilities include monarchy. It seemed people played king before there were kings with real authority, private property, and the democratic procedures of elections and suration, the random selection of political officials from a pool of qualified candidates, a way to avoid factionalization. When considering current global issues and a general sense of the inevitability and pessimism about finding solutions, for example, the feeling that the scale of modern society makes hierarchy, bureaucracy, and inequality unavoidable, Graeber and Wingrove wonder how humankind got stuck asking, "At what point did we forget that we were playing?" Rather than being prisoners of our own creations, they suggest the possibility that we might play our way out of current problems. Along with scientists and political leaders, the importance of asking what if is also true for educators, where complex and seemingly unavoidable problems exist. Growing up, Debbie Lee Keenan, who was part of a loving, complicated, playful Chinese-American family in which she was encouraged to play games, read books, and use her imagination. When she was 8 and at a new school, she was a victim of racism. A classmate sneered, "Last year we had a Mexican. What do we have now?" No one did anything about this outrageous behavior. As an adult, Debbie wondered, what if someone, a teacher or classmate, had come forward to support me? She has spent her professional life asking, what if we help young children learn how to spot and stand up against discrimination? And what if we use materials to help create playful spaces where educators can explore and take risks needed in social justice work? How can we create the joy needed to sustain such work? As a classroom teacher, school director, author, and lecturer, Lee Keenan's work has inspired numerous teachers and has had an impact on countless children. A discussion about educators brings us back to the International School of Billund, the site of the Facilitating a Student-Composed Schedule Picture of Practice. Here a group of teachers asked, what if we let students create their own timetable? At the same time, teachers in other study groups asked other what-if questions about their practice. What if there was a whole day when students could follow their passions? What if we asked students to decide how to practice their skills? What if we had fewer rules on the playground? What if schools help students to learn to ask what if, to use play as a strategy for learning? Students would be better prepared to take on the essential and difficult problems the world faces. Leveraging the evidence. In this chapter, we offered three approaches to explore how play supports learning: a survey of specific characteristics of play and the relationships to learning, a review of the research providing evidence from a variety of disciplines, and an exploration of the role of play, experimenting, exploring, testing in adult learning and innovation. These explanations not only provide a foundation for our research and this book, but they can also serve as a helpful tool for you. When faced with comments such as, "School is for learning, not play," or "We do not have enough time to play," you can draw on these ideas to explain the importance of playful learning to families, colleagues, and supervisors. Having more than one way to explain how play supports learning is useful. Certain explanations are more effective for certain individuals. We also hope our three-part explanation supports your understanding of this complex relationship, providing a multifaceted picture of the connections between play and learning.